Welcome everybody to another week at the Damage Report. I'm John Adirola. Brooke Thomas is also here.
I'm here. I'm here. Yeah, we were having a conversation you do not want to be privy to.
Yeah, it was weird. I still don't understand.
It was weird.
Probably never will. But anyway, we do have a lot of other topics that I think I have a pretty good understanding, a working understanding of. Did you know? Impeachment is proceeding. So we're gonna be talking about that a little bit.
It's all we've been talking about.
The Fox News war, host versus host. Very exciting with the president now directly weighing in. Last week we told you about Shep Smith versus Tucker Carlson and Fox management weighing in. Now the president is putting his shortened thumb on the scale. And so we're gonna talk about that. We've also got, let's see, threats to start a civil war. We've got the new squad.
Okay.
We got the other squad, a little bit not white enough. Wait until you see what CNN's got for you now. So we have that. Voting rights, we've got some discrimination, Bernie Sanders being attacked in the mainstream media, a whole bunch of stuff. So it should be a pretty good show.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's just jump right in with the latest on the impeachment. A lot happened over the weekend in terms of Donald Trump and the brewing impeachment inquiry. We're gonna give you all the updates in just a minute, but I wanna catch up with Fox News and their fight to either sort of have marginal like journalistic credibility, like at least implying that there could be something here versus those who are just in the bag for Donald Trump. And that was on display this weekend with Ed Henry just asking questions of guest Mark Levin. And take a look how that went for him.
What happened in the Oval Office on that call? Was it illegal or not?
Well, we know it's not illegal. What crime was violated? Can you name one?
I'm not naming them. I'm saying others have suggested.
Nobody's naming them.
But well, no.
Instead, we have named. Hold on, Ed. Ed.
It's not about me.
It's not illegal.
President asking another president to dig up dirt on a candidate. You're okay with that?
He's a former vice president.
Dirt on a candidate? What dirt are you talking about?
The president of the United States. I'm not saying this was illegal, but I'm asking you.
This is.
Are you okay with a president asking his counterpart? This is a simple yes or no to dig up dirt on former Vice President Joe Biden and his son. Are you okay with that?
First of all, your question is not honest. So I don't give yes or no answers.
From the transcript,
let me finish, Ed. You have all morning. I have 2 minutes. It's not an honest question. Show me in the transcript where the president said that.
Well, I don't have it in front of me, but there's a whole paragraph where he asked about Joe Biden.
Hold on, I'm really trying to talk to the American
people. He asked about Joe Biden, and the president said.
So what he asked about Joe Biden? Isn't he allowed to ask about Joe Biden?
Okay, so look, that goes on and on and on and on, and none of it's any more productive than that section. So I'll leave that there for you. But that was Ed Henry, who he kept saying, it's not about me, I'm not saying it's a crime and whatever. I do read into that a little bit that he does actually think that it's bad. I don't think he's just playing devil's advocate, but that's fine because Donald Trump has broken law. So that makes sense. And Mark Levin is just not having any of it. So
are they friends? Friends are allowed to
now,
disagree. We disagree.
I'm assuming. I have no idea.
Yeah,
but they're colleagues technically.
Yeah.
They're both sort of involved in, you know, a broad definition of this career. Mark Levin obviously is a slightly different sort of it. I mean, he's a crazed ideologue and conspiracy theorist. That's all he is.
That they thought was worthy of having on their show.
They do constantly because he's on Fox News. And so he's not having any of it. If Ed Henry is like, the president clearly wants dirt on Biden, he keeps saying, what dirt? You know what we're talking about. Why are you playing dumb? And then saying the president didn't ask for that. But you go on to say in that it was perfectly appropriate for him to want investigations of Joe Biden. So it's not even internally consistent, let alone consistent with reality. He can't even maintain what it is that he's saying for a couple of minutes. Ed Henry is just really teeing it up for him. Do you think this is serious? And rather than just doing the obvious Fox News thing, which is to say, no, it's not serious, he starts attacking Ed Henry. And we might speculate as to why he would do that. Perhaps he knows that Donald Trump is watching since it's Fox and Friends. And apparently Donald Trump was, because Donald Trump began retweeting people tweeting about Levin attacking Ed Henry. I'm not gonna read all of them for you because we don't have enough time in this hour, because, and this isn't the full count, as Yashar Ali tweeted, he retweeted at least 19 tweets about Mark Levin attacking Ed Henry, including this one, which says, a Sunday morning, amen, Mark Levin, preach brother, you shut down Ed Henry and the pro-shark media with the, and that might stand out to you as being a bit weird, What's the pro-shark media? That's because Trump But About Sharks is a parody bot account that takes Trump-related tweets and replaces keywords with the word shark. And Donald Trump retweeted that because he doesn't know that it's a shark-focused bot parody account.
Right.
And that's what the president does. He also tweeted things like this, Mark Levin sure put that lying S head Ed Henry his place, didn't he? This is the president who like this,
this is our life.
I know.
This is so sad.
The whole thing is so weird. I also don't like that I apparently share with Trump a distaste for sharks. That's apparently why the bot started, was because Trump is
somebody who doesn't like
sharks.
So weird.
It's just really weird. We have to censor presidential retweets about the bickering between Fox hosts. And look, I've said a lot about Mark Levin and who he is and how he's different from some of the straight news people on Fox News.
Uh-huh.
It might not be super clear from that video. So I want to give you a little bit more of that interview.
I'm an American citizen. If this CIA operative is going to be the guy that brings down my president, I want to know all about him. I want to know what kind of dogs they have, how many marriages they've had, if they have a DUI. I want to know if they're a partisan. I want to know everything. Where did they keep the transcript of the phone call? Gives a damn. President has the power to issue an executive privilege order. Doesn't matter if he kept it in his pillow. He can still protect that. But he didn't. He gave it up.
Super fast note, not related to anything, but if Ben Shapiro is watching, you are staring into the ghost of Christmas future, because I was reading some strong Ben Shapiro twitchy energy of not looking at the, also like he can't even pretend to be a human. So that whole thing was, I'm incensed, I'm angry. We've seen Cenk slam the table many times.
I like it.
I want to know how many cars he has, his wife, who's his wife? What did he do? That's not real. You're not a human. You're not even actually that angry about it.
Yeah.
And what would all of that information provide? So let's say the whistleblower has a DUI. Let's say the whistleblower was a figment of all of our imaginations. We already have the transcript. We know all of what was said by Donald Trump. All of this is a sideshow. They're attempting to make an extremely simple story seem complicated. It's not complicated. The president tried to get the Ukrainian president to meddle in our election for the personal benefit of Donald Trump so that he would get military arms. That's it. We don't need the whistleblower at this point because the transcript already admits all of that. You can look at it yourself.
Yeah.
Who cares? I don't care if the whistleblower is 3 6-year-olds standing on each other's shoulders with a trench coat wrapped around them. It doesn't matter. They already released the transcript.
That's the most fascinating part about all of this. It's the most interesting to watch is that everyone who is just hardcore in support of the president, no matter what, they can't argue against the talking points that the White House actually put out. So they just
so they ignore them.
Pretend they didn't see them. They pretend you're making them up. And I didn't know where they were going to go. I thought that we were going to have people saying, no, that's just fine. It's fine to do that. It's so bad. And it was so bad that to support him, people are pretending not to have seen his own words, things that he was
refused to read
proud to release.
You brought up before
it's
the show,
so
you brought up Kevin McCarthy and his interview, I think it was on 60 Minutes.
It was 60 Minutes, yeah.
And so the 60 Minutes host, which one was it? Scott Pelley.
Time, I think, right?
So yeah, he quotes the worst section, the I need you to do me a favor though. And Kevin McCarthy says, no, you added a word, you added though. No, he didn't. It's in the transcript. How have you not read
and
it?
And also,
five
what
pages.
Would that do? And then, like, you end up like having this long conversation, this long back and forth
I think
on whether
though,
he added though.
I think the though is damning, but he didn't add it. It's in the transcript. And really fast, I mean, look, all of this is crazy. All of this is an attempt to muddy the waters by kicking up new or old right-wing conspiracy theories. Just to give an idea, Trump tweeted in all caps, who changed the long-standing whistleblower rules just before submittal of the fake whistleblower report, drain the swamp. That is based on a Federalist article that implies that sometime in the recent past, whistleblower regulations were changed so that you no longer needed firsthand information about what you were blowing the whistle on. That is 100% not true. It's not based on anything. It is simply made up by the Federalist, and Donald Trump gets to just imply that it's true, and many of his followers, millions of Americans, will simply trust that the whistleblower rules were changed. They're never gonna check it themselves, just like the Federalists didn't check it before they implied it. And that is the thing. You have the clear information that is already present in the transcript or the summary of the transcript, and then you have a whole bunch of attempts to muddy the issue and make it seem like something it's not. The entire thing is ridiculous. And we don't have all the time to go through it. But over the weekend, news broke that in 2017, when he was meeting with those Russian ambassadors in the Oval Office, he apparently told them, the whole thing of you meddling in our election, I'm not too worried about it. Not that he doesn't believe it, which he has since said that he doesn't believe it, but he didn't care if it happened at all. His conversations with Vladimir Putin and Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, those were also put into the code word classified extremely secure server for some reason, God only knows. Rudy Giuliani said over the weekend that he's not gonna cooperate with the investigation if Adam Schiff is the person that's leading it. So this entire thing is ridiculous and getting more ridiculous, but we need to stay focused on the parts of it that matter. And these conspiracy theories being kicked up by incredibly biased grifters in defense of the president, that is not the part that you should be listening to. Okay, with that, we do have to take a short break. We'll come back a little bit darker angle on this story after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Thus far, there are basically two strategies that Donald Trump and his defenders are using against this impeachment inquiry. We've got misinformation, tons and tons of misinformation. The second, though, is worse. It's threats. You've already seen a little bit of this. Last week, he implied that either the whistleblower or whoever was providing information to the whistleblower should potentially be executed. We should deal with spies like we used to. And that was just a taste of what we've gotten over the past couple of days. Donald Trump also tweeted out a quote from Pastor Robert Jeffress. I'm not gonna read the entire thing, but it ends with, "If the Democrats are successful in removing the president from office, which they never will be," I'm assuming he added that, "it will cause a civil war-like fracture in this nation from which our country will never heal." So I'm sure that back in the 90s, Robert Jeffress was saying the same thing about Bill Clinton. It would destroy the nation, we could never impeach him.
Oh, you're being sarcastic.
Probably not.
That, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes, but I think that is an opportunistic use of, I've found someone who used civil war-like terminology, I'm just gonna tweet it out, no big deal. I just wanna start sending messages to my followers that if this were to happen, it's as big of a split, as big of a wound to our nation as the Civil War.
I hate that, and I feel bad stealing someone else's joke. I don't remember who tweeted this. It was like retweeted on my page, but it was like, it said, "Trump's only talking about the Civil War because he knows we put up statues of the losers."
Okay, that's a good point. I don't know who tweeted that. That is good. They deserve credit. That same sort of idea, Rudy Giuliani, who is bafflingly a major public figure in America, he tweeted, I appeal to honest and fair-minded Democrats to realize that equal treatment under law is necessary for domestic tranquility. We are all Americans. The differing treatment by media and law enforcement for Trump's versus Biden's and Clinton's is a real problem for all of us to solve. So if we're going to have domestic tranquility, maybe gotta go easy in this particular case. What's the opposite of domestic tranquility? I think we have an idea of what that might look like.
Also, people who do things like bring up the Civil War as like a when talking about themselves personally. That is so racist. It is. It's gross. The Civil War was about slavery. Mm-hmm. And all you out there that are like, no, it was about states' rights. Mm-hmm. It was about states having the right to own slaves. Okay? That's it. Mm-hmm. One right. That was all they were fighting for. It was about slavery. Nothing will ever again be a civil war in the United States. It just won't happen.
I agree.
This is about people not wanting the leader of this country to break the law. Don't compare yourself to Jesus, and don't compare your personal battle to the Civil War.
Exactly.
Like, let's just all agree to those rules, you know?
Let's do that. I'm very glad that you brought that argument, because very often they'll say, no, it was about states' rights. And then they just always seem to stop talking.
What right?
They never actually. So what do you think you mean by that? There's another example of that I've seen very often. It's very popular on social media, and it ties into this. So Laura Trump, I think she's the fourth worst Trump. She tweeted, "Try to impeach this." So there's two issues with that. One is that seems like a threat. The idea that like, oh, you can try, but there's so many more of us. We'll come and get you. Do you know all of us have AR-15s? But this image that you see there is generally not used as a threat against impeachment. It's generally used as a, well, look at, this is why we win elections. Look, the whole country is red. And that to me is like the, no, it's about states' rights. Okay, so when you put out that map, what do you think that means? You know that you lost the popular vote by millions of votes. You know that that doesn't actually mean that 85% of the country votes Republican. It seems to be implying that voting is actually done by each acre gets a vote or something like that. That like if you have a big pasture, that's 10 votes. And I will very often hear, like, so when I responded, I tweeted out in response to that, I said land doesn't vote, which seems like a pretty, I don't know how you argue against that. And then it got into the whole popular vote thing. And so the response always is, but the only reason you won the popular vote is because California and New York. And I always wonder.
Those are humans, though, right?
And what? And what is that?
Humans.
What does that mean?
They matter. Everyone, if every human matters the same. Also, someone replied to her tweet with a picture of Nixon's electoral map by county.
It looked the same.
Yeah,
Don't quote me. I think he won the popular vote by like 20%. Like that was a time where you had these big blowouts, and he got impeached.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. If you would like to make the case that rural voters have some sort of natural moral superiority for their vote compared to people who live on the coast or New York or California, feel free to do that. But you have to actually do that. You can't just imply that that's the case without making the case.
Also, we're having fun with how stupid that map is, right? But what's frustrating about that is that that argument right there is try me. Mm-hmm. We can do
that's
what we want. Try me. And that's not okay. If you didn't do anything wrong, you shouldn't have to say nobody will care, because essentially you're saying nobody will care.
Yeah.
People like us so much that no one will care. Mm-hmm. What you should be saying is my father-in-law didn't break the law.
Yeah.
The fact that you're not that saying step. That, right? Like this is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I agree. And
that you can't even defend it. You're just like, no, so what? That's essentially that her tweet essentially says, so what?
Yeah. There's too many of us. Even if he broke a law, I don't care. There's too many of us. By the way, the polls have moved so fast in the past week.
That's true.
Just another poll. Majority support for impeachment.
How stupid that tweet was.
Exactly. So there's the overall threat against the country. There's also very particular threats. So last week it was we should deal with spies the way we used to. Jump to this weekend. Donald Trump says, like every American, I deserve to meet my accuser. Especially when this accuser, the so-called whistleblower, represented a perfect conversation with a foreign leader in a totally inaccurate and fraudulent way. So he didn't. You put out the transcript confirming everything that the whistleblower said. Second of all, you're gonna find out who the whistleblower is when they testify before Congress. But following up from his effectively threat to execute the person, I find that to be worrying when he's like, I deserve to meet him in person. There had been a report from 60 Minutes that person was in some sort of witness protection or some sort of protection. They have since, the lawyers have backtracked on that. I don't know how exactly that was misstated, because 60 Minutes said they have a letter specifically saying he was in witness protection. Apparently that's not the case, but obviously the whistleblower is concerned. Yeah. And we saw what happened to Epstein. Not saying anything, I'm just saying watch out for this person. And then we also have outside of that individual, we have another individual. So Adam Schiff, who I'm not necessarily always the biggest fan of, but he's been very outspoken about this issue. Trump tweeted, I believe it was this morning, saying, Representative Adam Schiff illegally made up a fake and terrible statement, pretending it to be mine as the most important part of my call to the Ukrainian president, and read it aloud to Congress and the American people. It bore no relationship to what I said on the call. Arrest for treason? Well, again, that's that whole thing where, and this isn't just on the right, like resistance folks love to throw it back to the right. The idea that like, I don't like you, you're gonna get executed for treason. Everybody seems to use that as like their go-to. My personal stance is I don't want anyone to be killed by the state. Even Donald Trump, I don't care if you commit treason, you're not getting executed. You can go to jail for the rest of your life. But that is obviously at the very least intended to get his followers fired up about the idea that Adam Schiff could go to the electric chair. Which is a joke he also made about Joe Biden about a week ago about how he'd get
the
electric chair.
Never be a joke whatsoever, right?
He also referred to AOC and the rest of the squad as savages this weekend. So that was just, that's just one of the smaller ones. It's not directly about starting a civil war, but to give you an idea of how this is proceeding, poorly. Yeah. Do we want to move to our other topic?
Yeah, let's do it.
We don't have much time, but it stood out to me. Last Friday on Real Time, Bill Maher had his like closing thoughts thing, his big rant. And this time it was about his frustration with white liberals. I want to give you a little taste of what he said. Here's a few of the excerpts.
There is a weird self-loathing going on among white liberals, and it's not helping anyone. Lifting up those whose society has cheated or forsaken, that's liberalism. Hating all things white is just tedious virtue signaling. You look like Justin Timberlake in Bad Teacher. The answer to mass incarceration is to stop putting undeserving blacks in prison, not to put more white people in Twitter jail. Here's my question. How many white liberals would pay actual reparations? Real money taken out of your paycheck every week. If you really feel this bad about the whole race thing, if being white is really this toxic for society, let's tax it. Let's tax whiteness.
Okay, so that went on for about 8 minutes. Those were, I tried to put in some of what I thought were the funnier lines, and a couple things there that I think a lot of people can say, yeah, I have seen people that go sort of overboard on Twitter. There's always a little bit of truth to it. I'm gonna let you go first. I'm just gonna, spoiler alert, not a big fan of the argument.
I'm not a big fan of Bill Maher either, period. Like I wish that like people would stop giving him attention. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I mean,
if white people could be canceled, okay? Bill Maher, who has said the N-word, who has been xenophobic, who has spewed a bit of like anti-Muslim rhetoric, would have been long gone. He still has a show, and well-meaning people are more than willing to go and sit next to him. So stop. Also, like, no one says being white is bad. That just like minimizes everything.
Well, really fast, to be fair, he put up a selection of 4 tweets of random people on Twitter saying that they're embarrassed to be white.
Oh.
And if you can find four people on Twitter saying something.
Cannot crack a smile. But no, I don't think white people should center themselves in arguments and discussions on race and how they feel about it. But it's okay to care. But nobody said being white is bad. Like, I don't know, it's really weird. Like, it's kind of like when a man hears a story about a terrible, toxic man and says, men suck. We don't think he means every single man in the world. Like, it's like, it's okay. Like, you know, like I don't think the white person who tweeted that weird tweet wants to change their skin tone. It's like, I don't know, just think outside of the box. I guess, I don't know what that argument was.
I mean, I know what the impetus for it is. It's behind so much of what Bill Maher says. It is fear that something he joked about is going to get him canceled in some fashion. That he's going to get canceled from doing a, you know, a show at a college
it's
or something like
happened.
That. It's always
he's immune.
Exactly. It's if you're a comedian and you reach a certain age, you're eventually going to become whatever that is.
People who fight against the things that he has said and done on his show still go and talk to him.
Yeah.
Still
yeah,
and I'll show a bigger
as
platform.
As I've said, I'll go on it. I'll still go on it. It's a big show. A lot of people watch it.
This is corny. That was such a weird argument, and it's unnecessary. And listen, nobody wants to pay for reparations. No white people want extra money coming out of their check. Nobody wants to pay for healthcare either. The thing is that reparations is about the big head start all the white supremacy that helped like create this country gave to white people. So unfortunately, that would be something that you'd have to do to make these even. But nobody who's given something wants to give it up.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to give up any power. That's why the people in charge are supposed to make you.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to give up extra money out of their paycheck so a poor person can go to the hospital. I do. But a lot of people don't. A lot of people aren't willing to. That's why somebody in charge has to force you to.
Yeah.
That's what, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I get it. Nobody, everyone works hard for their money and they don't want to share it. Yeah. Unfortunately, for this thing to work, you have to.
Yeah.
If you've got a little bit more than everyone else, you have to. That's just kind of how it works.
Which is how all programs work.
Right, exactly. So.
Yeah. And if you're, look, I know that he makes those sorts of arguments because a certain number of people like them. But you can make them without using explicitly right-wing frames on those issues.
Right.
Like the idea that what's going on is white self-loathing. It's that I as a progressive, I wake up and I look in the mirror and I just hate my skin. That's not what's happening. That's what the Daily Wire says. That's what the Daily Caller says, Bill Maher. That's not what actual progressives say. If you had progressives on your show, you might find out about that. Stop surrounding yourself with at best centrist Dems and right wingers. If you spent less time with Barry Weiss and Milo and people like that, you might know how we think rather than how they think.
I feel like this whole segment has become a push to get you on Bill Maher. Is that what we're doing here?
Yeah, I think pretty much. Okay. And then also just the final point is how many liberals would actually want to pay for reparations? That to me, look, I honestly don't know.
That
I imagine quite a few would be okay with it.
Yeah.
That to me reads as, I know that we all say we care, but come on, we don't really care that much. Maybe I'm reading too much into his own psychology, but that to me is a revelatory statement.
Yeah.
It says less about other people and more about him. Anyone who calls out virtue signaling, it's not to say that it doesn't happen. There are some people who virtue signal, but the people who hate virtue signaling, what they hate isn't just the 1% of people who are signaling, it's the other people who have virtue, because those people know that they do not, and they hate seeing their own lack of values reflected in a changing society. That's what I see. Maybe I'm crazy, but that's what comes out of his rant to me. It's not to say that he's wrong on everything, but he keeps coming back to this subject and it is obviously a self-interested position for him. He's worried about financial repercussions to himself for saying things like, as you point out, when he used the N-word on his own show like a year or two ago.
Right,
I think it's fear. That's all it is.
I'll take it, I guess.
Okay.
Self-preservation.
Get it. I want to be preserved.
Yeah.
Okay, just don't say bad stuff. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, the news squad.
Oh,
after this.
Oh my goodness, it's the worst.
The squad is popular, but not everywhere. Not amongst some in Democratic leadership, certainly not in the mainstream media. And so I wasn't too shocked, I guess, when CNN attempted to roll out their counter squad, as you'll see.
Even before they were elected,
you have adopted the badass label.
These freshman congresswomen created their own group, the Badasses.
We were out running for Congress, across the country. Then we kept running into each other. Badasses kind of came organically from the group since we all had either served in the military or in the CIA.
A band of sisters who bonded while storming the unfamiliar terrain of politics. Translating their service is exactly what they did with their 180 on starting an impeachment inquiry. Going from no to yes after hearing President Trump admit he spoke to Ukraine's leader about Joe Biden. Others followed suit, including the House Speaker.
I think we all sort of came to that conclusion together. We texted each other, and I think we were all going, okay, I think this has all changed. This is a bright line.
Backing an impeachment inquiry is risky political business for these congresswomen.
Okay, so there's a lot of issues there. The biggest, though, is that a lot of people saw that clip tweeted out as, these are the women who led on impeachment, leadership specifically. And they said there's political risks to it, perhaps, but less if you are literally one of the last people out of hundreds to switch over to it. I guess that's leadership in some weird definition of the word, but when you're the last a year or 2 years after others have been pushing on it and getting attacked for pushing on it, I don't know that you deserve to have the leadership label applied to you.
Yeah, and honestly, none of them should have sat there and allowed any bit of like erasure of Congresswoman Maxine Waters, period. Mm-hmm. And it's not honorable that the babies in cages didn't get you there. It's not honorable to stand up and say, this is the fault line. That's not, I'm glad, whatever it takes anybody to get there, that's fine. But we have crossed the line before. The line has been crossed.
Why did those other things not be the bright line for you?
And why are you proud of that? Exactly. Like, and I think that's so frustrating. Also, there's a whole other side of this. I would love, from the beginning, I would have loved to hear more about a group of women who were all in the military or in the CIA, who all flipped red districts. It's a bummer that we haven't heard more about these congresswomen. But this is not their time to shine, period.
Yeah, and especially rolled out with their like Marvel Cinematic Universe trailer of the walking slow and the organic branding of the badasses there.
It's just, it's too typical. Like, and I wish the reason that this keeps happening is more people are willing to take up space continuously, willing to take up space when they don't deserve it. And we need more people who are often seen as those who should go on TV, people who are seen as more palatable, being willing to say, no, I shouldn't do this. No, this is not fair. No, I shouldn't be the one you're talking to. Who you really should talk to is this. Thank you, but this is not the time for me. You should talk to her. You should talk to her. And we needed more people to say, you should talk to her.
Yeah, we didn't get that, but those hers were brought up. And let's see what you think about this group when you see how they talk about those people. Because it wasn't like it was obvious that this is CNN saying, no, forget the squad. The squad's out of, this is a new squad, take the squad. But it actually came up in the video. Take a look.
They represent swing districts. Very different from another more famous female freshman group, the squad.
Okay, so I'm just gonna put it out there. The group of freshman females that people know about is the squad. Are you guys the anti-squad?
What I tell people in my district, the left wing of our party has created such momentum behind things like moving forward on our environment.
None of us is ever gonna get in a Twitter war with anyone else. If we have a concern with someone, we're gonna go right up and talk to them about it. And we're not going to add unhelpful rhetoric to an already bad tone coming out of Washington.
I don't think any of us wanna be the loudest voice in the room. I just wanna be one of the most effective.
So
a lot of the criticism from all sides on the squad, because now I can't even give the squad credit for what Representative Maxine Waters has been leading since the beginning of Trump being elected. But now moving on to the squad, a lot of the criticism against him is just based on blatant racism. Blatant racism and like anti-Muslim hate, a lot of it. That is what it is, a lot of it. And so you've got to say that, you've got to point that out. You can't like lead into it by saying that they want to be the loudest voices or they get into Twitter wars because they defend themselves and their livelihood and their right to be where they are. Like that was just not an okay way to handle that, to stand up for your sister, for your colleague. That wasn't okay.
Instead,
who cares if you don't use Twitter to communicate the way that most of the people, like the younger generation in this country, that's how they communicate. People who aren't, who don't look like you, who don't get the TV screens, who don't get the TV cameras, who don't get the shout outs, who don't get noticed no matter what. They use Twitter to communicate. They're using Twitter to communicate. And so because they're willing to come down to where everybody else is communicating, it doesn't make you better than them because you haven't moved towards the 21st century.
Yeah.
That it's okay. And it's okay to do things different because not everybody likes Twitter. But I don't like that there wasn't just a hardcore defense of your colleague, of your sisters.
There's the opposite of that.
Yeah, well, that's
same
not
woman,
okay.
So you were pointing out the Twitter comment where effectively that congresswoman was saying, they're cowards for doing it on Twitter. I'll actually talk to people face to face. She was also asked by Jake Tapper if it's unproductive or unhelpful to have people like Rashida Tlaib and Al Green as a part of the push for impeachment, who, by the way, were pushing for it literally years before all these new women are now being called leaders on it. And she again attacked Rashida Tlaib and all of those.
Really
fast, if we could just jump ahead, just the last video, it's only like 10 seconds long.
Okay.
Just to put, like, it's so clear what the point of this segment was. I'm just gonna put it out there. Are you the anti-squad? It's so clear. So take a look at this last little clip.
Their previous service taught them to be fearless, which comes in handy now.
There's not a vertical chain of command structure, so you know,
Well, there is, but obviously it sounds like you guys aren't following it.
No, but no one can fire us.
So so they're leaders, even though they're the last. And even though they have gone along 100% with the strategy, the political strategy of the centrist Democratic leadership, it looks like you're not following the chain of command. Yeah, but you're following the way that things have been done in DC for a very long time. You weren't leaders, you wait until everyone else went out there and they got attacked month after month after month after month. And now you get to just waltz in at the last second and be called leaders. That is the way that things work in DC. That's not like some big thing that we laugh about. The entire thing incredibly frustrating. It's so easy to just take AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, Ilhan Omar, all of them, and then just push them into the shadows.
Yeah, I am. And
to attack them as you're pushing them into the shadows.
That was inappropriate, and they should 100%. Know better. They should do better. That was inappropriate, and it's just,
Okay, we're gonna take a break. We come back. Voting rights. After this. With time running out until the next set of elections and many concerns around the country about the security of the elections, the security of people to actually be able to exercise their right to vote, lots of action is needed. And thankfully, there are a number of organizations fighting to give people that right. We're joined now by an expert in this area, executive director of the New Georgia Project, Insay Ufot. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi, very glad to have you here. Excited to learn about the New Georgia Project. So, in this, you know, this big area of organizations concerned about people being able to exercise their democratic rights, what are some of the efforts that you're a part of?
So, yeah, we were founded in 2013-14 by a former candidate for governor, Stacey Abrams. And the mission of the New Georgia Project is very simple. Our goal is to register, engage, and activate Georgia's rising electorate, the new American majority, people of color and young people under the age of 30. To date, we've helped 400,000 Georgians register to vote, and we've registered 50,000 of them just this year in 2019, with the belief that we can create super voters, that they are not born, that they are made. When we have candidates that are representative and an agenda that is clear and connected to the priorities of people of color and young people.
So I believe in 2018, the percentage voting, it's a midterm election, generally the percentage voting is lower, was pretty good. And in some groups, including younger voters, that especially in midterm elections, generally don't turn out at very high rates, they were more engaged. Is it your belief that, especially with the help of organizations like the New Georgia Project, that 2020 is going to be a big turnout election for some of these groups?
That is absolutely the belief that we have. We are investing sort of in year-round engagement. So one of my great frustrations as a young person, as a person of color, has been the way that we talk about elections and the sort of strategy for engagement. Oftentimes in the sort of last weeks in the fall before an election, people, you know, come with the urgent message, you know, vote or die, rocking the vote, and an incredible amount of inefficient investment in the last couple of weeks before an election. And we believe, again, that in order to create super voters, and those are people who vote in every election in which they're eligible, that we have year-round conversations with people about what matters, that folks will tell you what their hopes are for themselves and their families and their communities, and they'll tell you what their fears are. I think that, you know, there are a lot of assumptions about young people and people of color and their political participation, and people use these assumptions to inform massive multi-million dollar campaigns. Some of those assumptions are that, you know, young people are unreliable and that Black people don't vote and that Latinos are not citizens. And we have shown differently. Of the people that we, of the like 1 million face-to-face conversations that we had in 2018, we saw you know, a 50% turnout of the people that we've registered to vote, which blows historical numbers and trends out of the water, and lets us know that we're onto something, that we're on the right path.
Hey, Inse, good morning. I want to talk about voter suppression a little bit. And because I think a lot of people still don't realize how bad of a problem this is. So if you could break down just some of the tactics that you've seen and also what you all are doing to fight that.
Right. So oftentimes when you say voter suppression, like the image that's conjured in folks' minds is, you know, Bubba on the back of a pickup truck with trying to intimidate Black voters. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen, particularly in Georgia, but across the country, is that the voter suppression attempts have become much more sophisticated. So, for example, we massive purges of the voter rolls. So we're really proud of the 400,000 people that we've registered to vote, but I must offer that fact in the context that under former Secretary of State, now our asterisk governor, Brian Kemp, 2 million peoples. We're talking about 10% of Georgia's polling locations closed. And most of them were closed or merged in majority people of color neighborhoods and communities where the majority of the voters are people of color. Oftentimes, they'll be given a race-neutral excuse for why it's happened, right? Budget cuts, it's an attempt to save money. But the impact has had a disproportionate, disparate impact on people of color. We're talking about the exact match system where, you know, if you register with, if your information does not 100% match what is on a number of rolls that the state maintains, then you are purged from the voter rolls. So if my name is Michael and the person who's doing the data entry at the county level inverts the A and the E, my information no longer 100% matches what the state has on file, and I'm kicked off of the voter rolls. In Georgia, if you don't vote in two back-to-back federal elections, you are put on a list, a pending list, and set to be purged if you don't vote after two federal elections. Wow. And so when you add these suppression schemes together, they may not be, again, on their face, like we are making it more difficult for Black people or young people to vote, but they have the same impact.
Okay, and thankfully, there are groups like yours fighting against this. Inse, thank you so much for joining us today, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks for having me.
We're gonna take a short break here. Stick around after this. Welcome back, everybody. So we only have a couple of minutes remaining. We do have content that we're gonna be getting to. Mm-hmm. That is going to be in sort of our overtime, which will be available on the YouTube channel. Also, for the live, like if you want the full thing, it is part of the TYT members content. So if you become a member of the Young Turks, which you can do by going to tyt.com/join or tyt.com/John, you get access to the full show all at once. Otherwise, it'll be going up later on YouTube. But I did want to just let you know that if you haven't already rated and reviewed the podcast on iTunes, people have been leaving some great reviews, including sometimes with some criticism. So really fast, I want to read a critical one.
Okay.
Not 100% critical, but just a little bit. So this is from Jay Beard, who says, there's only two things I'd change about the show. John crams a lot into his 45 minutes, sometimes two or three interviews plus regular coverage. The info is always great, but it can feel a bit rushed sometimes, like my reading of this. Maybe he could consider extending his show to take his time with these topics, which may help with number two. John covers topics he's passionate about, but the news is often upsetting. I don't blame him for being bitter, but sometimes he's even a bit Shapiro-esque. Ooh. Not on morals and views, obviously. Stay positive, Johnny Pie.
What?
I think, I mean, I'm bitter about things. Jay Beard. No, Jay Beard's a nice, I don't mind the criticism. Don't ever call me Shapiro. Oh, sorry. Don't ever call me Shapiro-esque again. But yeah, sometimes the show is rushed. including literally right now.
Yeah.
Because we only had a couple of minutes.
We only have a couple of minutes. Can I talk about my podcast? Because this, I also subscribe to the Damage Report. I rate it. My phone, for some reason, doesn't register it.
Suspiciously.
But sitting in my little spot next to the Damage Report is my own podcast. And it's called Controlling Our Narrative. And it's really cool. We have a bunch of great guests on. Edwin, right? It's good. It's a good podcast. You like it? It's pretty solid. John won't listen to it. That's fine. We'll move past that. But I think you'll like it.
We'll see. Of course. No, you do. You've had awesome guests on, and people should definitely go watch and rate and review that as well after after TDR.
After this, it's fine. Okay. Yeah, do them both. Do that one first. I'm on this show too. Whatever.
Thank you as well. We'll see you after. So you might have been led to believe recently that schools are taking bullying far more seriously than they used to. That might be the case in some places, but not at Emmanuel Christian School in Springfield. Let's talk about what happened to Amari Allen, a 12-year-old girl. She says that during a recess, three boys from her grade came up to her, pushed her to the ground, covered up her mouth, and then as she was screaming for help, and then began cutting off sections of her dreadlocks while screaming horrible things at her. They said things, this is according to Amari Allen, like they put me on the ground, one of them put my hands behind my back, one put his hands over my mouth, one cut my hair. They were saying that my hair was ugly, that it was nappy. Her grandmother later said they called her ugly and told her she should not be alive. They said she shouldn't have been born. She goes on to say that the boys had previously stolen her lunches. They would eat it in front of me and say that I didn't deserve to eat, that I should just starve. So the fact that she should not be alive has apparently been a running theme of the bullying against this girl, who apparently waited several days to even tell anyone about her hair being cut off because she was afraid that if it came out, the boys would do even worse things to her. Right. As of right now, it's being investigated, but the boys have not been suspended or anything.
This is so frustrating, man. And a lot of this is on the adults because this wasn't an environment where this little girl felt safe. And they weren't being watched like they should have. And I know that like parents and teachers can't be everywhere, but we're talking about missing multiple days of actual violence. Mm-hmm. How does that happen? How is there a whole lunch period where nobody notices that a little girl is sitting there crying with no food in front of her while three little boys are eating her food and saying nasty things to her?
Yeah.
At what point? It's just too many things have been missed. That's a problem, and that's something that needs to be looked into. This is violent. These kids shouldn't just come back to school the next day like everything is okay. I am one. I don't believe that more children should go to prison. Mm-hmm. But something needs to be done as far as within the school. These kids need some sort of help. They need some sort of intensive counseling. This is violent. Mm-hmm. A lot of violence. My worry is that the entire environment there is not conducive to like safety for all children. And that's a problem that the adults need to look into.
Yeah, and if they're 12-year-old boys, then if this is the arc that they're on, mm-hmm. what will they be like at 14 or at 16 or at 18? Maybe
what
nothing.
What else can go uncovered
maybe they'll
in
grow
the
out
space?
Of it.
Yeah.
Or maybe the people who would cover up someone's mouth and twist their arm behind their back and begin cutting off their hair could kick her the next time or sexually assault her the next time. I mean, apparently they're so free during recess that they can literally bear someone to the ground and begin abusing them in various fashions. Maybe watch. First of all, they're cutting off her hair, which means that they got scissors or a knife or something like that. It seems serious. Maybe don't just give vague assurances that it will be looked into. Maybe do something about it. Because she was worried that there would be consequences from those kids. Was she wrong to worry that? Could there be consequences?
She should feel protected. And I was so lucky growing up. Like Terry Brosset was my chemistry teacher in high school. She's like a mother to me. Like I'm so close with her family. My science teacher in middle school, Mrs. Perry. Like I always had someone, if I ever felt like this, I always had someone that could have been a confidant for me, an adult that I know had my back. I feel so sad for this child that she doesn't have that in the entire school.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I know that there's like conversations about, you know, how are schools supposed to see ahead of time if there's gonna be a student who's gonna do something even crazy, yeah, or some mass violence.
Just that
I don't know,
type
but
of energy is being put out there by three kids and nobody noticed it.
Yeah, and that, apparently who have, I mean, clearly there's racial implications to this. And if they're repeatedly attacking a student and saying, you should be dead, you should starve to death, those are the sorts of warning signs amongst 12-year-olds, yeah, that you should probably be on the lookout,
yeah,
for. Anyway, hopefully the girl will be perfectly fine. Maybe the authorities, both on the police side and the student, the school side, should take this at least somewhat seriously. Talk to the kids, maybe watch the kids for a little bit.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like too much to ask. Okay, let's turn now to a very different topic involving Bernie Sanders and the mainstream media. Bernie Sanders is no stranger to having either him or his supporters attacked in a variety of different ways. Some of those are starting to repeat themselves in the 2016 election. Take a look at a recent video from, I believe it's MSNBC.
There's a ceiling. There is nowhere to go, but there is no up to go. And all of those support, I actually overheard someone saying that I thought was an interesting point, that basically at this point, if you are still supporting Sanders as opposed to Warren, it's kind of showing your sexism because she has more detailed plans and her plans have evolved. I thought it was an interesting point and I think there may be something to it.
Yeah, I agree with all that.
it's a good answer, you know, Chris.
Okay, so in the dictionary, I don't know if this is in the dictionary, but if self-satisfied smile is in the dictionary, the smile she had on after she delivered that thing that she overheard, that would be that smile. And then to have everyone else around the table laugh like it's the end of a sitcom, like Joey, oh Joey, and then everyone laughs and then we end the episode. So that's Emily Tish Sussman, who used to work for, I believe it's the same organization as Neera Tanden. Daughter of a billionaire, Democratic donor, just to give an idea, doesn't necessarily color her commentary, but you never know. So she overheard it. It's not that she believes that, it's that she just overheard someone, yeah, say that. And because it was such a nuanced and sophisticated argument, it won her over with its rhetorical power and strength. The thing is, as we've pointed out many times, I understand that some people decided in the first week of the 2016 primary election that Bernie Sanders has only one sort of supporter and they look exactly like I do. That's just not the case demographically, and you can take it up with pollsters, but as we've pointed out many times, polling between November of last year and March of this year found that Sanders was more popular among people of color than among white people. His share of supporters are more likely, they're more likely to be female than men, 41% to 37%. You can say, I don't get that. Why would these facts be true? You can say that, but you can't just discount that those are the facts. That's what every poll shows. And so at some point you have to update your worldview to match.
Yeah, so a couple things here. One, yes, that was a stupid statement. That was an inappropriate statement. It wasn't a fair statement. Also, I do believe Elizabeth Warren's policies and plans are more detailed than any other candidate. They're also, she's not Bernie's twin.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not. At some point before everyone started like really breaking it down this election cycle, one was like, okay, they were very similar. What are they gonna split up? It's different. It's been different. And so one could say you're picking Bernie over Elizabeth Warren because they're different and you like what he's talking about a little bit better. I guess I don't know. It was weird because they're not the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Her plans are more detailed than everybody, but it's okay for people to pick other people. A lot of people are picking Joe Biden.
Yeah,
and his plans
are
exactly. And so it's because they are different.
Yeah.
That's why one would pick Bernie over Elizabeth Warren. Also, I cannot separate from that, just because he's got a strong female base, that a lot of women voted for Trump and there's internalized sexism in that too, absolutely.
Yes,
so
you're
having
not wrong.
Women supporters doesn't mean there can't be sexism. That is just completely separate. There's no, I guess I don't understand the argument here of why it is sexist, because they're simply not the same.
Yes, the only reason I pointed out is that if you are implying that the only people left are sexists who should naturally go to Warren but are refusing to based on their sexism, the fact that there are more women supporters than men, that does not necessarily, as you point out, there are women who definitely supported Trump against their own personal interests. But that is something that should be factored into the discussion at the very least.
Okay.
And
it seems pretty simple to me. They're different.
Yeah, they're very different. They're running against each other.
You're right. They have a lot of, I think, shared things, but they are complete. They are different.
Yeah.
I guess I can't say completely different, but they are very different. And as this goes on, we're seeing that more and more. They're different. They're even different on healthcare. And that's something that I didn't even expect.
Yeah.
They're different. And so that's why people are choosing to go here or choosing to go here.
Yeah. I don't demonize people. Yeah. If you want to support Elizabeth Warren, there are many reasons why you might support Elizabeth Warren over Bernie Sanders. I don't, but I understand that a lot of people do.
They're not the only two choices.
No, they're the only two.
No, they're not. Stop it.
You know, I heard about a guy, Stop Seth it. Moulton. I don't even know if he's still in. Then you just have the two. So here's the thing. My main point is MSNBC. They're going to be covering this primary nonstop. They're going to be talking about it a lot. We can take that for granted. If you're going to be doing that, why not at least educate people about the topics that matter? And the differences between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, those are significant, especially considering so many people don't yet understand them. So if you want people to understand those differences, I can suggest many people who could come on who are not necessarily descended from billionaires. So you might not know them. You don't necessarily go to the same cocktail parties. But you just did a great job of describing some of the differences. I've made videos explaining the differences. We could do a whole thing on foreign policy. We can do something on how they'd approach climate change. We can do something about their history of activism versus academia. We could do all of that stuff. But what is not a productive way to try to stress the differences between them is simply stating that one group of supporters is sexist and the other is not. That is a complete waste of time, as well as being disproven by the data. Like, you have a responsibility and the resources to bring in the best people to discuss this stuff, and MSNBC at this point isn't even trying. Thank you so much. Great to have you on. Thank you, everybody, for sticking around for the overtime. Great show. Lots planned for this week, so see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.